I'm surrounded by fucking idiots. Welcome back to the Axe and Iron Podcast. If you made it through the first episode, welcome back to the second episode. I am Chris Cash from Mount Phillip Metalworks. I'm here with Roy Scott from Vintage Axeworks. We have a very special maniac with us by the name of Matthew Justice.
From Beaver Queef Woodcraft.
Beaver Creek Woodcraft on Instagram.
That's right. Legendary in the flesh right Legendary. Here with some fine folks.
All right. All right, Matthew, give us a little background about what you do, what you currently do for your occupation.
Well, I basically, since I've been able to swing a hammer, I've been a carpenter, trained by my father. And Beaver Creek Woodcraft was kind of the beginnings of a dream of bringing back American craftsmanship in my own special way. Obviously, anybody that kind of pays attention to me knows that I specialize in finish axes, which is something that's kind of unique. Not a lot of other people are doing.
That is unique.
Yep. They're definitely fucking weird, so it fits yeah. in right with my persona, right?
Where did the name Beaver Creek Woodcraft come from? I've never understood that.
Well, it's real simple. A guy that I kind of look up to a lot when it came to early on learning about having a social media presence was a guy by the name of Jamie Boggs, and he has a page that he runs on Instagram, Facebook, all the YouTube especially, and it's called Burning River Bushcraft. He lives very close to me, and the Burning River, as you know, is the Cuyahoga River.
I did not know that.
Well, it's caught on fire more times than anybody can count on.
Where are you talking about? Where's it at?
So Cuyahoga River is one of the major rivers that runs through Northeast Ohio. And it has been so polluted since the Industrial Revolution that it's caught on fire probably about a dozen times in the last couple hundred years.
Like wow. Fire on top of the fucking water?
Yes, literally like burning river. I mean, okay, right now, I'm drinking Great Lakes. This is Conway's Irish Ale. One of their most famous beers is Burning River IPA, I think it is, or Burning River, something like that. And they named it because they're from Cleveland. They're right on the Cuyahoga River, and it's
The Burning River is just a nickname.
Yeah, the Cuyahoga, which most people that aren't from Ohio cannot pronounce if they look at it on like printed on the page because it is like C-U-Y. It's a weird ass. It's an Indian name. Most people can't pronounce it, and it's been known as the Burning River for probably almost a century, maybe even a little bit more. Because, like I said, I mean, pretty much since the Industrial Revolution, it's caught on fire multiple times.
Interesting. So back to the original question.
The guy that first kind of pushed me to start putting myself out there with an online presence, his Burning River Bushcraft was what he named himself because he's from the greater Cleveland area. So obviously I live on the Beaver Creek.
That's not obvious.
Okay. Well, I live on the Beaver Creek.
Right on.
And the Beaver Creek dumps out into Lake Erie, just like the Burning River, the Cuyahoga River does. Okay. So when I was thinking, what am I going to call myself? Beaver Creek became like the obvious thing. And then I don't believe in the whole bushcraft thing in America. Woodcraft and woodsmanship is something that we don't call it the bush.
Right.
You know, it is in Australia. It is in Canada.
Right.
So woodcraft and then our tradition of woodcraft and woodsmanship goes back to the turn of the century and stuff. So I didn't want to use the term bushcraft. So I called myself Beaver Creek Woodcraft.
That's pretty cool. Sounds cool. I never thought about that actually. Bushcraft. Yeah. It probably was adopted from Australia or Europe or somewhere.
It actually was. The term bushcraft was coined by an Australian outdoorsman right around like post-war era, like 1950s, I believe. Don't quote me on that. That's
right.
Don't quote this motherfucker on anything.
Right on.
But woodcraft has traditionally been it was, yet again, don't quote me on this, George Washington Sears, I believe it was, Nesmuk, wrote the book Woodcraft. That was one of his early
turn of the century
books, and that kind of coined that term in America. So people have a history of traditional woodsmanship.
That was a deep dive. Seriously. into the woodcraft there.
I mean, but also being a carpenter, you know, I mean, the store I used to go to with my father when I was a kid was, you know, the woodworker store, the woodcraft store, whatever, right. You know, those stores still exist to this day. So, I mean, obviously that terminology kind of meant more to me than bushcraft, which I think is an overused term nowadays. So that's kind of where I went with it. Because originally the plan for it was not necessarily to be producing stuff for retail sale. It was to just have an outlet for the things I'm interested in. And then it kind of started to turn into that.
Correct. So carpentry is your... What's up?
I told you he was a fucking nerd.
Yeah, it's that's cool. I'm good with it. So
Jesus was a carpenter, Roy. Oh
my. Carpentry is your main occupation, but you're passionate about woodcraft. Have you ever wanted to make the jump over to doing something like that full-time?
I lost my earbuds. Hold on a second. What was that?
Have you ever want to make the jump to do something like that full-time? Like in the woodcraft business, whether it be axes or... I know you guys do...
I would love to. That was kind of the idea that I started to see come to fruition. And honestly, Roy... I'm probably going to embarrass him, but he's been a big role model to me.
Role model.
I've told him this before plenty of times. Honestly, he's the only person that I know of that is honestly making a living doing what everybody wants to do.
Yeah. Gotcha.
But I mean, honestly, you know, to change it onto your aspect of things is that I taught myself blacksmithing and bladesmithing as when I was in my early teens.
Finally, we're talking about something fucking cool. Shit. God damn. Yeah, I mean, all the you know what wood's good for? Wood's good for burning, and that's about it.
I know. I mean, and that's the thing. So I have an interest in all that stuff. I have a huge interest in experimental archaeology and trying to understand how
general skills that would keep you alive out in the woods.
Really any kind of historical craftsmanship interests me.
So last night we had a couple of beers, Matthew Justice and I, we were talking and it got real fucking deep about like bug out survival in case the fucking coronavirus takes over everything.
Right. Strong possibility the way the world's looking right now. Jesus Christ. All right, well, let's talk about the Finnish axes then, because you say you didn't adopt the bushcraft term because it came from Europe, but here you are into Finnish, ugly-ass Finnish axes.
Ugly-ass Finnish axes.
They are. Yeah. You know why I say that? Because I know an axe guy that's got a whole bunch of axes just like Roy, and he's had a bunch of Finnish axes, and every single one I've ever seen is absolutely forged. Like, maybe it's not terrible in their terms, but the ones that I've seen are just like assembled. Forge weldings are really raw and rough on them, and the necks. I mean, they're not an easy forging either. Those things look like they'd be such a pain in the ass to make. But
who is this that you said that you've seen?
Oh, Nick. My buddy Nick has a bunch.
Really?
Thrain Axe and Saw Company. Yeah.
Really? That's interesting.
So he just started following me on Instagram. We used to follow each other a couple years ago, and then we both stopped following each other, and then just out of nowhere, Nick Thrain started following me.
You guys are weird with this follow, unfollow shit. But anyway, Nick's had a couple Finnish axes, and my buddy Kevin was into Finnish axes for a really long time, and he went on this Finnish axe binge and just had to buy like every single one he could find on eBay, and I was like, these are the ugliest axes in the world. And he's like, I know, that's what makes them so cool. And I kind of agreed with him, because you never saw that, obviously you never saw that pattern in what we were doing over here.
But
they're so weird. So what got you into them? Like, where'd you first see one, or did you just like them because they were weird?
Honestly, I've had this weird infatuation with Finland for a very long time. And it probably devolved from my interest in Mazinagat rifles, when I was younger and I first started collecting surplus rifles. And then obviously also rejecting the public school history lessons and educating myself. I learned about the Winter War, learned about all that stuff. And I never was into Finnish axes. Like the first time I seen one, when I first got into axes, and I'm like, hey, I like Finnish knives, Finnish rifles, Finnish this, Finnish that, the history. Let me check out these axes. Whoa, what the fuck? Those are really weird looking, you know?
Right.
But they kind of grew on me after a while. And then one of the biggest reasons was, is I seen that most of your seasoned axe restorers through Axe Junkies, whatever, yeah, you know, this was a little bit earlier on before Instagram really was taken off.
Right.
They would shit their pants at the thought of trying to hang one of these things.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
so
yeah,
here I am thinking, like, you know, I kind of want to like do something that sets myself apart. So I'm going to do something that everybody else basically shies away from because they're scared of the challenge.
Right.
And I've never fucking, I mean, that's the one thing is that I've never fucking backed down from anything in my life. Like, I will fucking do it until I can't do it anymore. I don't ever admit defeat. So I'm like, fuck it, I'm going to do this thing. And it kind of caught a bug in me. And then I've kind of developed a lot of, affinity for them. I really have. I have a pretty large collection. And honestly, I would probably say that I've single-handedly imported more of those axes to the United States or even North America than probably anybody else. I've had.
Oh, so you have a rather, you have a really large collection then. Or did you get some and sell some?
I've gotten some and sold some. Okay. But right now, I probably possess the largest collection of Finnish axes in the States.
So oh, what's wow. that number? What's
yeah,
the number?
What is that number?
Right now, it's right around 30.
That's a bold statement.
That's not a lot, yeah. I mean, the only other person I can think of that might be able to beat me would be Benjamin Bochard of Traditional Tools. He has an Instagram and everything. Not to give him a shout out, but
Where are you basing the numbers off of? Like from the Axe Junkies guys or whatever?
Well, from mostly all around the interwebs, and the simple fact is that they've been a very, very much they've been a rarity in the States.
Oh,
and
okay.
Most people that have one, they have one or they may have two, and they picked them up off eBay. And I've actually spent the last few years developing relationships and honestly friendships with local guys in Finland, people that I call my friend to this day. That
oh, cool.
You know, I mean, that's honest to God friendships. And these guys tend to hook me up and give me really good deals, and I try and buy in bulk whenever I can. And so I've, like I said, I probably had 75 heads pass through my hands, and right now I possess right around 30 of them.
Wow.
That's pretty cool. Maybe even a little bit more, which doesn't sound like a lot. It doesn't sound like a good number, but when you think about something as rare as that and uncommon as that.
Yeah.
Well, and the value of those heads are significantly higher than just a normal standard American felling axe.
Yeah, so that was my next question. Like, what do you get for a finished axe? Yeah,
the puns are not lost on me.
Yeah,
I totally get it.
So how much is one?
So a basic bare bones Finnish axe rehung on a custom carved, you know, ash handle with a leather mask, you know, is $300.
Oh,
and the price goes up from there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's what
they're
it,
like
you know,
$300 worth of cool there.
Do you sell just heads?
No, I took a page out of Vintage Axe Works book, and I do not sell heads.
So here's the other question that I have for you, Roy.
Yo.
Why have you never done any of these or just zero interest? I know you have like a total, you're like total anti-European anything when it comes to axes. Why is that?
I'm just kind of anti-European in general because America is awesome and the American felling axe just has so much.
You just like the style, the shape, and the history, and
yeah, and there's so much romance with it. And I'm not over that yet to expand out to other things. So I mean, like, there's no reason for me to like them. I don't really care about them. I don't like the looks of them. I think they're silly. I've hung one for our buddy Chris Killinger. And it's still in my shop. I was going to make him a whole handle and everything. I practiced hanging it on a piece of scrap wood, and everything about it's different and weird.
Which honestly, and this shows Roy's level of commitment and craftsmanship, is that I have actually purchased other people's work just to see what my competition was like. Yeah. Roy is one of the few people I've seen that's actually gotten it right off the bat. Like, his first try fitting a stub to the head was actually was really, really good.
So, thank you.
Yeah, and something, I mean, something, and that's the thing. It is, it's completely, that's what I enjoy. I always enjoy a challenge. So it's completely different from hanging like a normal Western axe. So it's a totally different animal. Like, the rules that are totally different, you know, and how you fit it, it's just, it's a totally different animal. So for somebody that's has their head stuck in the Western world doing those style axes, to be able to be successful with his first try at doing a Finnish style axe or one of these collared axes, that speaks volumes.
I'm telling you, it's the draw knife, baby. The draw knife. Kills.
All right, let's stop talking about Roy because I was falling asleep. What's your
God?
What's your shop situation looking like? Like, where are you restoring stuff at? Where are you working on honing your craft, so to speak?
Well, literally, it was in a dilapidated building up until this year. Like, literally, I have, like, mice. Hashtag shop snake is a real thing.
Oh, yeah, I've had shop snakes.
I thought I only had one black rat snake living in that shop, but then I found out I had two. We've never had a personal encounter, so it's been great.
Oh, my God.
But, yeah, that shop is completely dilapidated, and it's basically unworkable at this point, and it's been that way for months. And I've been so busy with my day job that I haven't actually had a chance to work on anything recently.
You started on the shop. You got the foundation, and you got a couple of walls and stuff.
Yep. Right now, the shop as it stands, the new shop, has a solid foundation, has a solid floor system. All the walls are standing. Right now, I'm at the point where I'm going to put rafters on.
Yeah.
And once that's completed.
How big is it?
It's only 12 by 16, but really,
That's pretty big.
But the idea is to, not only is it to do what I've already was doing, but I'm also going to start blacksmithing again.
Oh, okay.
So the blacksmith shop is basically going to be put on the outside of that with a
overhang. You can always put a lean-to up, or overhang.
That's the idea, you know. Yep. So that way it gives, and I have space around where I built the shop where I can expand it. And once that's completed, I can get back to work and I can start doing things again. But obviously, because of my work schedule, I'm no longer going to be able to take like custom orders. Maybe one or so here and there, but for the most part, I'm going to be producing things that I want to make, and then if somebody wants to buy it, that's great.
Dude, custom orders fucking kill me. Like,
they do,
and it's the majority of my work. And
kill you
so
how?
Much,
what do you mean kill you how?
Well, there's just so much hand holding going on. And then
you mean custom as far as like they want this head, this particular handle, this.
Yeah.
Okay. I got it.
So someone sent me a message last night. Oh, I really like this. My grandfather, it's his axe and I want to keep it. Oh, and by the way, can you supply old growth hickory for the handle?
That's why you just do it. That's why you just do what I do and just do whatever you want to do. And then if it sells, great. And if it doesn't, just do more of it.
If it's somebody else's head, though, that's the thing, is that now you have to, you know, now there's like stakes there. Like, if Roy decides to take a head off the shelf and hang it and do whatever the hell he wants to do to it, if it turns out the shit, he can always redo it, whatever, when he has the time. And he sells it for what it is, and it sells. When you start talking about taking on somebody's grandfather's axe, there's a huge weight on your shoulders. And the biggest problem I find with projects like that, where somebody, even if it's not great grandpappy's axe, somebody picks up an axe head off of eBay and they want you to do this, and they're going to give you criteria that you have to meet. The biggest problem to me with that is that there's no flow to the project. When you start on a project from scratch and you have the vision in your head,
right,
you create what you want to create, and what it becomes. When you're forced to create something for somebody else, it just kind of there's no flow to the whole project, and it just becomes like a fucking bog, you know.
What was that last thing that you made here recently, Chris? You did some sculpture thing. It's like a week ago or so. It was some weird twisty thing.
Oh shit! I don't know. I've done so much shit since then that I don't. No, that was just a that was just to practice different techniques that I don't do that much. Yeah, it was like some weird Viking warship looking shit.
Yeah,
it was just to practice different techniques. It wasn't a commission job or anything. Yeah, there was a lot of techniques involved on that that I don't always do in my sculpture work. So, yeah, it was just one of those pieces that was like, you know, hang on the wall. And if somebody wants to buy it, great. But if not, I don't give a shit.
It's literally just hanging in your shop now?
Yeah. And, well, I mean, we shot a video on it, too. So, like, pretty much everything that we do in the shop now gets filmed.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was just content for the channel, and you know, it's just something fun that I happen to do that day. That's all. But that's how I do everything, though. You know, I mean, if you don't know that, that's what I do. I just make shit for myself, and if people want to buy it, great. If not, the only like production thing that I do are the dragon tail openers.
Yeah,
and you know, I get burnt out on doing those, so I have to like switch over to something else. But for what you guys do, like you're saying, custom work sucks. You guys raise the price for custom work, right?
No, yeah.
I do.
I would say. So I've got a base price. If I supply the head, that's one price. If you supply the head, it's a different price.
Right. Yeah. So you just gotta make it up like that.
Yeah, and that's the thing is that, like, you know, in all honesty, Vintage Axeworks kind of sets the prices when it comes to axe work, whether it's custom or whether you're purchasing something else. So when I do something, you know, like I can only charge what somebody's willing to pay, you know, and that's kind of been my hang up into, and you know, I've kind of gotten to the reality of it that, like, people are willing to pay a lot more than most guys like us think that they're willing to pay.
Yeah.
You know, so
something's always worth whatever somebody will pay.
Yeah. Find out what it is.
And the thing of it is too, is like for Matthew, for what you're doing, is you're not relying on that income. So if you do one of these finished axes and you want to sell that bitch for $500 because you love it or something, just hang on to it until somebody gives you $500.
And honestly, in the last 9 months or so, that's what's changed. Before, actually, I was relying on a lot of that income. Honestly, the restorations I was doing was paying my bills quite a bit. It was definitely supplementing my income and keeping my family afloat. Just recently, I've gotten into a new gig, and it's taking up most of my free time. So,
yeah. But you've got a new day job?
Yeah, but at the same time, it's because of that. Now, once I finish up the work that's on my plate that I've already promised to people, that gratefully I have understanding customers who most of them are friends, and that's good, and they understand what the situation is. But after that fact, after that work's finished up, it's only going to be things that I want to do. And if somebody wants to buy it, that's great. If somebody doesn't,
that's great too. Yeah.
And that's really what I want to get to, because like I said before, my biggest problem is when somebody wants you to do something specific. I mean, you understand, you know, you forge for a living. So if you forge something purely out of passion, you create something that looks awesome, but it's like a one-off.
Yeah.
And you know, like, can I recreate this exactly? Probably not, because my mindset at the time when I was making it, you know, I mean, to recreate the mindset and the passion you had at the moment when you were making it from the scratch, now somebody wants to commission you to make, I want you to make me one of these. To get yourself back into that mindset, but now it's like, you know, it's like paid commission work.
So yeah,
it's hard to get that flow back. And that's one of the biggest things that I've struggled with, is that don't ask me to make you something specific, you know, it's really hard to do it. You know, people don't understand. Most people that are just paying for this sort of stuff do not understand the level of like artistry and passion that goes into creating a piece.
Right.
So whenever you start a project, Chris, do you have like, the majority of the time, do you have like kind of an end goal item that you want to create, or do you just start moving stuff around and stuff happens organically?
Yeah, like, I mean, it's super cheesy to say organically. I mean, but that is really what it is. But yeah, I just start letting the tool, the material go the way it wants to go.
Yeah. Start moving metal and see where it goes. Yeah.
Yeah, especially with what I do. I like bringing up one-off pieces. I enjoy the shit out of doing one-off pieces.
That's the best kind of work. Yeah.
Well, for one, my day job for the longest time was doing auto body repair, and that was the same shit day in and day out, day in and day out for 18 years. Everything was straight, parallel, linear lines. Everything had to be perfect. And now I like, when I started blacksmithing years ago, I was like, fuck, I can make this shit do whatever I want and it'll be cool. Yeah. One of those types of things. But as far as income goes, I'm in a kind of a cool space to where I can create shit like that and don't really have to sell it because I work with tools as well and I fall back on selling tools and that kind of shit. So as far as income goes, I can make whatever the hell I want in the forge and still have, so to speak, income coming in from tools and other projects that I have going on. Most recently, I did this really cool. I'm going to release it this week. So Bethlehem Steel was the number one steel manufacturer in the United States from like 1904 to 2001 is when they went out of business, and they were literally supplying almost every piece of steel that built this entire country. So they're no longer in business, and I have came across some Bethlehem Steel equipment, brass tags. And what they were they made hundreds and hundreds, probably thousands of these brass tags. And what they were the tags that the workers would inspect a piece of machinery with, and they would hang this tag on it saying that the
hang on a second. Stop dragging your beer bottle across the fucking desk. It's so loud. Stop doing that.
It picks up like crazy audio.
My bad.
It's all good. No. You're fine. But anyway, we'll cut that out. Where's he going? He's falling down.
What the fuck are you
He's
doing?
He's falling down.
I gotta switch over. Hold on, your fucking horses.
You dying? And this is the part that we edit out.
I'm not editing that out. There we go. Keep rolling. Go.
What's he doing?
I don't know.
You all right? Passing out on us?
No, I had to plug my power cord in and take my headphones out. Does it still sound all right?
Yeah, it's fine.
Fucking
so I found these Bethlehem Steel brass machinery tags, and after each employee would inspect a piece of machinery, they would hang this tag on them. So on one side, it says Bethlehem Steel Company, like real cool font, brass tags about the size of a half dollar. On the other side is a number, and... So what I did was I came across some new old stock Bethlehem Steel bolts.
How did you find those?
I don't know. I bought them somewhere a long time ago, and the head of the bolt says BSC, so Bethlehem Steel Company, on top of them, and then there's like a picture of an I-beam. So I took the bolt, turned it into a bottle opener, because bottle opener.
Oh, shit.
So, and then I brass riveted the brass tag onto the bottle opener.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so they look pretty badass, and I just started a batch of them yesterday. So,
oh man, that looks really freaking cool.
That looks awesome.
So you can see like the head of the bolt says, we can't see it in this picture, but it says Bethlehem Steel on the head of the bolt, and then the brass machinery tag is in the center, and then the actual threads of the bolt are
That's awesome that the threads are still on there.
Dude, that's way cooler than some fucking thing that says Vintage Axeworks on the side of it.
Go
that's
fuck
awesome.
Off.
Easy. Speaking of which.
Yeah, really.
But,
I've opened
yeah,
a lot
so
of
that's
beers,
a...
I must say. I've opened a lot of freaking beers in one of those openers.
Oh, yeah?
It works
cool.
quite well.
That's good to hear. Well, you must have got a good style. One. You must have got a good one. The real question is, though, have you sharpened it and thrown it at anything?
That's a good... You know what? I'm surprised.
Which
as
style
much as
did
our,
you get?
As our friend group gets together and uses one of those openers, we haven't tried throwing it yet.
Which style did you get? Do you guys have?
I think most of the time we utilize Roy's, which is the freaking double single bit model.
Oh, okay. Yeah, they are.
So
They're heavy enough to be thrown. And is that the OG?
This is the OG.
It's the original.
It's the original one.
I know.
Yeah. So when you get when do you work on this stuff? Because I know you travel a lot for your day job. So when are you actually in the shop working in the evenings, on the weekends? What's your schedule like there?
Me?
Yeah.
Honestly,
yeah, you're on this fucking. No,
I know you're not talking to Roy.
Yeah,
no.
But honestly, in the last like 4 months, I have not worked on anything other than the shop. That's the only thing I've been doing, and that's mostly on weekends because my day job usually keeps me caught up late into the evening.
Okay. And is the shop, obviously you're going to be doing woodwork, and there's a full timber construction, like the whole. I mean, it's all built out of wood.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's all true. You know, all your like normal stick framing. It was actually kind of a blessing to me to be able to get back to the early carpentry that I grew up around.
What's the carpentry you're doing? Are you doing now? Are you doing like commercial buildings? You doing residential?
Right now, I'm actually working for a commercial refrigeration company building walk-in coolers and freezers.
Oh, no shit. That's
something I kind of specialized in. About 10 years ago, I kind of jumped into that, and
his boys out here building meat lockers. You got a fucking meat locker guy on here.
Most of the time, I'm building beer coolers. So I'm welcome for the cold beer.
Right on.
Oh my god. So I knew that you took this new job or whatever, but I had no idea what you were doing. I mean,
yeah.
So Chris called me today, and I was like, Matthew's down in Columbus. He's doing something. And Chris was like, what's he doing? I was like, I don't know. Maybe carpentry, maybe turning tricks. I have no fucking idea.
Where's the what's the actual town called you're from, Matthew?
South Amherst, Ohio. It's a small town, probably less than 2,000 people. And we're situated right in between like Cedar Point, Sandusky, and Cleveland.
Okay, nobody knows where that's at, but that's fine.
Everybody knows where Cedar Point's at. Come on.
I've never fucking heard of that in my life. Never heard of that in my life.
You're such an asshole.
People even live in Ohio?
Yeah, dude, actually. It's like, know, other than ghettos, soybean, and corn, there is a few perks worth seeing.
It's like North Dakota. Do people even really live in North Dakota?
I love North Dakota. I don't know what that means.
How many people do you know from North Dakota?
I don't know. I met a couple people in a bar one night there when I was traveling.
Or Iowa.
So, top three states that all time that I hate. Ohio, Indiana, and Illinois. All time fucking hated states. I hate Ohio.
Why?
Because it is featureless. And in the wintertime, it's just a mud field.
Soybean and corn are features.
I fucking hate that state. I hate it.
Ohio?
I fucking hate Ohio.
All right, Matthew. I didn't have that kind of angst against it, but I just said whatever. I didn't know where you live. Roy's got
you gotta take his opinion with a grain of salt anyway.
Passion for it.
I hate it.
You came out to Ohio in September. You met me in Ohio in September.
Hey, yeah. Man. Ohio's got some of the fucking best whitetail deer hunting you'll ever see.
I have heard that.
But yeah,
it's not about soybean and corn. We grow massive bucks. What the fuck? Iowa is like the only state that beats us, and they have soybean and corn. So
they have the best blacksmith tool meetup every year. I will say that.
Yeah, that is very much true.
Out there in Troy. Yeah.
So that was fun. That was actually a lot of fun. I know I was only there just for the for a couple hours, but I had a good time.
I think I was only there for a day and a half too, or maybe no, I was there for 2 days, I guess. I left Friday morning. Got there Wednesday and left Friday morning. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
You came on like a Thursday or something.
Right?
Either something way, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
That's the worst thing about that, you should too. Go is there, that I've known about that.
Yeah, what's that? Yeah, I told Roy to come down there because there's axe shit. I'm like, there's axe shit down here, and these guys ain't buying axes.
Yeah.
So that's why
he came. I've known about that meet for a long time, but I've never made it down there, even though I live here,
How far is it from you?
Troy, Ohio? Shit. Yeah. I mean, that's pretty far.
Well, it's far. I drove 7.5 hours to get there. So is it further than 7.5 hours?
No.
It took you 7.5 hours? Where are you at?
I'm in Maryland.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah.
No, that's how the fuck would you even know?
So what's it like 45 minutes from you? He's like, oh, that's pretty far. Roy, you drove, what'd you drive? Roy drove like 2.5 hours to get there, didn't you?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's what, like an hour south of Columbus, right?
Something like that.
No, it's like it's above Dayton.
The only thing I know is Troy. I don't know where anything else. I know you guys have three cities that start with a C, and I don't know where any of the fucking cities are. Yeah, yeah. Think about that. What? Think about that.
Cleveland, Cincinnati, and Columbus.
Columbus, yeah.
And I don't know where either any of the motherfuckers are.
Cincinnati.
Honestly, though, one of the coolest things about doing coolers and walk-ins and all that stuff, the last company I worked for, I traveled all over the freaking United States. I even went up to Alberta, Canada.
Oh, wow.
Which is fucking awesome. Next time somebody says Canadians suck, dude, out west, they're fucking real cowboys out there. They're bad motherfuckers.
What, putting in coolers? You're putting in coolers up there?
Yeah. Yeah, oh, cool. I'd go out, and we'd either go out to a different state, we'd put them up, or we'd take them down.
Let's talk about these meets you guys do.
Oh, my God.
I got to know. I got to know what these are about. So I see Matthew Justice cooking sausage, and I see a bunch of guys in a tent that look like a bunch of sausages. What is all this about?
Nuts to butts, baby.
Let's hear it. Who puts this
nuts
event
butts,
on?
Clams to hams.
Who puts this event on?
Basically, what it is that we have a group of friends.
Uh-huh.
Like, who is the first person that Chris Killinger? Obviously, he did it. He invites everybody over to his place, so everybody goes, and then the next guy does it, which I think was that the one I did. In Mohegan?
You just did one, like,
so I invite everybody to come up. Everybody shows up. So then Roy plans something down in Kentucky. So everybody, it's like we're all trying to one-up each other. Like, I showed up to your shit. You got to show up to my shit. So we wind up traveling all over the fucking place, getting shit-faced drunk, having a really good time.
That's pretty cool. So what do you got? What do we do?
The last one we did was our friend J.C. Messer Custom Leather. He had a hangout at his family farm in Indiana, and we all made it out there for that. Well,
but you guys bring a bunch of axes and stuff too, don't you?
Yeah.
What's that?
Don't you guys bring a bunch of axes and do you guys sell them, or you just, is it like show and tell kind of shit? Like, look what I'm working on.
Just show and tell.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Mostly.
I
mean, Chris Killinger, his event that he's held the last couple of years tends to attract some of the newer guys that are willing to buy a few things here and there.
Oh, okay.
But by and large, it's mostly just guys that have similar interests, whether it be axes and guns and knives and camping and that kind of stuff. And, you know, like outdoorsman lifestyle kind of stuff. We're all friends with each other, so we try and get together as much as we can.
Hell yeah.
So, yeah, the last one, Chris, it was at Messer's place, and it was in a huge tent with, like, a tarp. The sides were tarp. But
wasn't there, like, a wood stove or something in there?
Yeah, like a barrel wood stove.
And you guys slept in this thing.
So, listen, these freaking idiots.
I want to know about the smell in this place.
Dude, it was huge. It was, I mean, this thing was enormous.
Really?
And these fucking idiots set up their little cots or ground cover or whatever, and it was raining all fucking night long, and I was the only one that set up a little fucking backpacking tent inside of this fucking tent,
That was smart.
I was totally dry and roasty fucking toasty.
Well, looked like a pussy in front of all of his friends, but yeah, he was warm and dry.
Well, I think what it is what Roy told me is he sleeps completely naked and he didn't want to embarrass you motherfuckers is what it was.
I don't think he would be embarrassing anybody. No, but what it is, I mean, to put that in a nutshell is that JC, what?
Nothing, go.
Okay, JC grew up in the Buckskin or the Rendezvous and stuff.
Who's
like, you
JC?
Know, JC of JC Custom Leather. He's the guy.
Just one
that,
of one of our friends.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
He's one of our group of friends. He's the guy that put on the Indiana thing. He grew up in the Rendezvous. He grew up like doing the Buckskinner thing and stuff. Like, have you ever seen like a reenactment of that kind of stuff.
Uh-huh.
And I grew up doing Civil War reenacting. So we're used to sleeping in the dirt with nothing but a blanket and a fire.
Yeah,
so we're right at home. Roy, on the other hand, if he didn't have his, you know, his kitchen sink and all that, he'd be lost.
I'm not gonna lie, I'm with Roy. No. I want to be comfortable wherever I'm going.
Dude, coming from the guy who, like, seriously, you fucking guys literally bring a fucking kitchen sink, a whole kitchen mess kit.
It did look rather fancy for an outdoor gathering.
That was fancy.
You guys had a lot of nice stuff in there.
That was fancy, man. They set up like a circus tent, put tarps all around it, had a wood stove in it. It was fancy. The last time around when we did it in Ohio, it was not nearly that fancy. We basically had raging bonfires and freaking steaks out our ass.
We had two bonfires going that on up there in Ohio. And have you ever heard of this freaking thing? They call it a freaking... What the fuck?
That was my phone going off. Sorry. My bad.
Have you ever heard of this thing, Chris, called... They call it a fucking discata? I just call it a disco ball. It's like a big fucking wok, okay? It's like this big around. So, and they just freaking throw all sorts of shit in there to freaking cook up over a fire.
No, I've never heard of that.
It's a thing down on the border, like Tex-Mex. So you take a plow disc, you weld up the drive hole, the square hole in the center.
Yeah.
You know, you put a little plate in there, you weld it up. And then usually they have like rebar handles that are welded on. And it was used, from what I understand, it was used by ranchers in the Southwest, like on the Tex-Mex border.
Ah.
They were used as a large cooking vessel to cook for a whole group of guys.
So, Chris,
that's pretty smart, actually.
I've hung out with these knuckleheads three times.
Right.
No, I've hung out with these guys more than that. But of the times, three times they have brought this freaking thing, okay?
Yeah.
And rocked your fucking world.
So what are you guys cooking in it?
So hang on, let me tell the fucking story. Whenever we were at the Ohio meet in Mohican, it was freaking cold and windy and whatever.
Right.
So first thing Saturday morning, we all wake up, and these freaking fools cook, like, I don't know, 10 pounds of bacon in this freaking disco ball, okay?
That was James Nish, yeah.
And there's this much fucking bacon grease inside of this big tub. And you know what this freaking guy decides to do? He's like, I'm going to fry up a fucking egg in there. And he cracks an egg, dumps it in, and it dunks down. And he was deep frying a fucking egg in all of the bacon grease.
And it was fucking delicious. Don't deny it.
I did not eat it. Looking at it made me just want to freaking throw up. It was so
You call yourself a Kentuckian, but yeah, you're scared to fry eggs in bacon grease.
A Kentuckian.
Dude, you weren't frying it in bacon grease. You were deep frying it. All you need to do was roll that egg in some freaking batter, and then you got a fucking, like...
You know what? That's a damn good idea. I think I'm
going to
try that next time.
So gross.
God, have you ever had sausage gravy and biscuits? Because that's basically what you're eating is freaking sausage grease and flour.
You deep fried eggs. And then Messer was like, I think I'll try that too.
I'm just showing you how to live, man. You don't have to follow the path. It's out there if you're interested.
Oh man! All right.
So what are you working on, Chris?
Those bottle openers right now. I have what did I do? I forged out like five of them today. Well, I have all the. So let me. How would I say this in your terms? So in blacksmithing, it's called preforms. So like you forge out. It'd be like getting the handle to shape before you final shape it.
Okay, yeah.
So I have like preforms done, and then I come back in and punch the holes and then punch the little tab in that opens the eye and all that stuff. So basically, on the power hammer yesterday, I punched in a little die marker that would put the coin in and yada yada. Got all the threads flattened on the bolt and worked on that for a little bit. And then we're What are we doing as a shop right now? We're filming three vlogs. Matt needs three videos this week, so we're filming three videos this week. We started one yesterday, another one today, and we have to film one more tomorrow, and those are all sponsored videos that need to be done by the end of this week.
Wow. Yeah. So do you want to talk about the sword?
Do I want to talk about the sword? What sword?
The one that you all just put out.
Oh, the Witcher sword?
Yeah.
So, we did...
Matthew, well, you're a nerd. Did you see this?
I don't Matthew left. I don't see him anymore.
Yeah, you turned off your screen. Right, you turned off your screen.
Okay. Is that what he did?
I'm right here.
Yeah, so I did a... I didn't do it. I had the only thing I did was, like, behind the scenes push these guys for this last sword. I didn't really do much to it at all, or anything at all. I can say that. I didn't do anything to the sword. But as a shop, Ilya and Matt built this magnificent Damascus sword for the Netflix show The Witcher. And it had meteorite in the blade. It had $500 worth of gems on the frickin'...
those were real?
Everything on that thing's real.
Oh, yeah, I thought that was like some costume jewelry or something.
Oh, no, this is like a $15,000 sword.
Yeah!
Oh, yeah, it's got real meteorite in it. The Damascus pattern came out, like, off the charts. The whole pommel and guard is all custom engraved by Ilya. It matches the show to a T, so they basically...
Look at you. You know what a pommel is now.
Yeah, I know now.
You fucking nerd.
I know. The big joke is right now that I keep saying in a knife, when you get like this cool contrast from the heat treat, it's called a hamon. And I keep asking them when the heck they're going to teach me how to grind in a hamon, because you don't grind in a hamon. So it's it's like a running joke. I keep saying, "Oh, is this the hamon?"
Is that how you've heard it pronounced?
What, hamon?
I always thought it was a hamon.
No, it's hamon.
Oh, okay.
It's hamon.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I mean, I learned about Japanese swords and stuff when I was interested in blacksmithing.
Oh,
you know, that's...
Let me tell you something.
Yeah.
Ilya is huge into Japanese culture and Japanese swords. That's like his thing.
Can we back that up 1 second here? When you say Ilya.
Ilya.
Are you talking about the guy that is like on Man at Arms and all that? I don't keep up with a lot of the...
That's Ilya. He works in the shop with me full time now.
Are you shit me? Wow. Yeah. Wow.
Way to do your fucking research for this goddamn interview,
no,
Matthew Justice.
Fine.
Fuck.
Fine.
No, I mean that's because I remember you talking about that in the last podcast,
okay,
and that's what I was thinking.
If you're familiar with Man at Arms, then yes,
yeah.
Matt and Ilya both work in my shop now.
Wow.
Yeah. So Man at Arms is no longer Man at Arms. It is now called That Works. It's its own thing where it's Matt, Ilya, and myself. And we're basically doing all the fantasy weapons, swords, video game swords, movie swords, and weapons that you saw in Man at Arms are now being done at my shop.
Wow.
And under the name That Works. Something happened with the company that owned Man at Arms, and it basically went bankrupt. And now we're not recreating that channel. We're doing our own thing now, and we're having fun.
I remember hearing about this, and that's what kind of brought up the question. I heard about it in the last podcast, and I was like, are they talking about the same people that I'm thinking of? And that's really impressive, because the work that I've seen him produce is just amazing.
So, yeah, Ilya's fantastic. He's a great craftsman, and we work together side by side all 7 days a week now. Which is really cool. So we're doing that, and that video is doing really well. Really happy with the way that came out, and so we're just still trying to mesh. We've been working together since November, really, and we're still trying to find our groove, so to speak, and it's going good so far, though.
So, dude, you all have, like, they have transformed that freaking shop. I can't believe that they built all that shit, or you all built all that shit so freaking quickly. That gas forge, you got the power hammer set up,
yeah.
The freaking grinder all going. Dude, it's
seriously
impressive.
We actually just finished another grinder today. We put another grinder up on another stand. Shout out to Broad Brick Ironworks for hooking us up. but yeah,
no plug.
Fuck. But yeah, no, we're having a lot of fun. Really, it's really cool. We all bounce off of each other. We're driving pretty well now, and things are happening. So it's cool to work with. Ilya every day. It's cool to work with Matt every day, and I'm learning a lot, and yeah, I'm just having fun. I'm trying to get them to have more fun in these videos. So like, if you watch the Witcher build that we just did, the first second, are you familiar with the Witcher series from Netflix? Not really.
I'm not familiar with it, okay. But I have seen it was like, I've seen the like the, you know, and I swear I've seen, it's probably been your channel.
Just yes or no.
So it was a book, and then the book got turned into several video games, and then the video games got turned into a Netflix series. So it's a big, long thing. But yeah, so that thing turned out awesome. It's been fun. We're having a good time.
The thing that I would like to ask you is that how exactly did you get into forging?
Oh man, that's a whole.
I mean, I don't know you personally.
I'll send you some links. I've been on a couple podcasts where I told my whole life story. basically, I've been working with metal since I was old enough to work, like 16 years old. As soon as I started being able to work, I worked. But and I started out in the auto body industry, and then I started doing kinetic found material sculpture and shit like that. And then I just started forging. And what the hell are you doing?
Your head, like all we can see is your fucking receding hairline.
Quit being God, so the, fucking judgmental, Roy.
The beauty Jesus. Of Skype.
God. Jeez Louise.
It's fine. But yeah, I've just been working metal my whole life, and just transferred into blacksmithing, like, I don't know, 2009, 2008, something like that. So.
Wow.
Yeah, man. It's cool.
Shit. You know, that's the thing, though, that I seem to notice is that, why are we looking at your fucking shirt, Roy?
No, go.
Okay. The thing that I notice is that it doesn't seem to matter what it is that you do. Like, Roy could transfer to blacksmithing and start to excel at it. You know, I mean, it's the same thing, is that it's like a certain group of people that tend to have like a certain set of skills that.
Yeah, just use your hands and figure shit out, like on the fly. Yeah,
guys that, I mean, obviously certain people are predisposed to working with their hands and they have a certain eye for things. And it doesn't matter what medium you're working with, but you can kind of excel at either. At least from the way I see it.
Hey, I want to change the subject real quick because I just noticed my phone just went off.
Let's do it.
Joey's TikTok is blowing up.
Jesus Christ.
You are such a dork.
Dude, Joey, your dog. 2 hours last night. Your
dog. Joey, my dog, yes. He's got one
TikTok for your dog.
Joey the Basenji, he's got one video that's just crushing it right now.
Ladies and gentlemen, please send Roy Scott more work. You can find his work at vintageaxeworks.com. He is clearly bored out of his mind and has nothing else to do.
How many followers does Joey got now, Roy?
Joey has 801 followers.
Jesus Christ. Dude, it wasn't even 500 last night. Last your dog. Night at like 12 o'clock,
I swear to God.
Not even 500.
Your dog.
My dog, yes.
His dog.
So I posted a video this afternoon, and it's already got 19,900 views on it.
That's so
bizarre. Oh, my God.
I'm not even going to attempt to dive into that whole thing. I see a couple other guys doing it and a couple craftsmen doing it, and I'm like, I'm not going down another rabbit hole of social media. I enjoy social media, but I'm not going down that part of it.
So TikTok is not set up for us. But yeah. the reason that I got on it, I just wanted to secure the name Vintage Axeworks before someone tried to.
I
put two videos out there. Vintage Axeworks has one follower. And only 35 likes.
Good. So it's like your real life. It's like your real life. You only have one friend.
And then he had too many IPAs and got really fucking bored and decided to make a TikTok account for his dog. And proceeded to watch it blow up in 3 days.
Oh, shit. It's hilarious.
I'm sorry.
How many followers does Joey have now?
And Matthew was the maniac going into this podcast. He was the crazy person. Right, okay.
Right.
Yeah.
How many followers does Joey have right now?
801.
Yeah. So right now, his dog has more followers on TikTok than I have on Instagram.
Oh, fuck.
His dog's clearly putting out better videos.
Yeah, he's creating dynamic, engaging content for sure. Yes.
Oh, dude, seriously, it went to 20,100 now. It's already gone up since I mentioned it. It's blowing the hell up.
I think Roy is buying Russian viewers for his.
Hey, no collusion.
No collusion. Matthew, let's talk about your Instagram for a second. You say you only have 800 and something followers on the Beaver Creek Woodcraft is where you can find him on Instagram. So your last post was January 19th. You don't post a whole lot, or you just started this account?
No, the account's been going for a while now, and honestly, most of the success I have, yet again, I have to give props to Roy Scott of Vintage Axe Works, because he's the fucking Instagram master as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah,
people take his advice and they utilize as best they're able to. Usually it's over, a lot of beer, so.
Yeah.
Most of it gets forgotten. It's wasted.
Yeah,
but no, it's been going for a while there. But I just obviously with a day job and everything, I have a hard time keeping up.
I'm right,
a father of four kids.
Oh so, wow!
Yeah.
Okay, that's why Roy said you were a maniac. Okay.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to disagree with that.
Wow.
So that's the thing, and then obviously in the last,
I think,
obviously in the last 5-6 months, I've just been so slammed that I haven't been posting anything.
So, Matthew, here's my advice to you, my suggestion. Keep things going and fluid with stories. People want to know what you're doing and, like, why the fuck isn't this guy posting anything? Just post normal Matthew Justice stuff just to keep people, like, aware of what's going on. Because if you're not interacting with people, they're just going to freaking drop off.
Yeah.
Well, are you are you interacting with axes at all during the day, or not at all?
No, not in the last, like I said, 5 months or so. It's been totally focused on the day job and building a new shop, because honestly, the shop I had was totally dilapidated. And towards the end there, when I kind of stopped working in that space that I had, it was just totally inefficient. I mean, you just could not produce in there. Honestly, the roof leaked more than it kept water out.
So the shop will be done when? When's the shop going to be done? Whenever you get back home and be able to work on it for
basically a longer period of time. I've been picking at it on like Saturday mornings and Sunday mornings and stuff like that as time's been available. And obviously, trying to be a father to four kids.
Yeah,
that's
a lot.
When the snow lands, you got to take them sledding and stuff like that. You know,
it's been kind of a mild winter though, hasn't it?
Very mild winter, especially for Northern Ohio.
Yeah, we're usually
just recently we've started getting hit with a little bit of snow the last couple weekends, and it's kind of stalled progress on the shop.
Yeah,
because I've been busy splitting wood and
drinking
the fire
beer
stoked in the house
and drinking beer.
And drinking beer and it's taking my kids sledding, doing normal stuff that normal people do. You know, it's kind of hard taking that time out to pursue these dreams, you know.
You guys love your beer. My buddy up in New York says, for a guy that doesn't drink any beer, you sure do make a hell of a lot of bottle openers. I said, well, there's a shitload of people out there that love drinking beer.
Yeah, no shit.
Cool.
All right, let's start wrapping this up. We're already pushing an hour.
Well, you're going to have to edit out all the shit I said anyway.
Yeah,
so.
No, it's fine.
I'm not editing that much.
We're not editing.
No, I'm just going to do a little intro, a little outro.
Do it live. We'll do it live. All right, Roy.
One fucking take. Goodbye. One fucking take.
Roy from Vintage Axeworks. This is the part of the show where you give somebody a little love who doesn't normally get any love, or maybe somebody you want to make aware of.
I do. I've been thinking about this since our last episode where you caught me off freaking guard.
That's all right.
Hang on. I want to get everything right here. His name is Meadowlark. Meadowlark. I'm looking him up right now. Meadowlark Knives. All right. His name's Joseph. He's only got 2,000 followers. I've known this guy for about 3 years. And he was kind of like Matthew. Started off heavy, did everything like kind of on the side. Then he got a real job, and then took a back seat to his knife making. But he has recently changed jobs, and he's focusing on knife, like making knives again. And his stuff, I'm not a knife guy, but his stuff is crazy fucking beautiful. And he and I were talking back and forth, and he actually bought, no plug here, a Beaumont Metalworks KMG TX grinder, just like the one that Vintage Axeworks use.
What was his name again?
It's Meadowlark_Knives.
Meadowlark underscore knives.
He's a young guy, early 20s, and he just, his work is phenomenal. It's just so fucking beautiful. Love
Sweet.
It. Have you ever heard of him, Matthew? You're a knife guy. I think he was in Kansas. Maybe Brett knows
conservative
him.
Conservative knife guy. I don't know what that means. I'm a weird kind of knife person where I don't buy knives just because to buy knives. I'll buy one knife that's my knife, and then I'll use that until I find something better. So I don't generally follow all the knife trends out there.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Well, who do you got, Matthew?
I've pretty much already used this as a platform to give a shout out to all my friends already. About the only person I can think of that I would like to give a shout out to is JC Messer, Messer Custom Leather. I already mentioned his name. That guy really does top-notch work, and he's really, really trying to make a go at doing this as a craftsman full-time. So,
and he's a hell of a guy. He's a hell of a nice guy.
Yeah, he is.
He's a hell of a person. He's the kind of guy that would invite you to his family farm and let you act the fool. Yeah, and then give you a bottle of homemade maple syrup and send you home.
Messer Custom Leather on Instagram, JC Messer. Yep. He's a great dude. He's messaged me a couple times, I believe. He's just a genuine, nice dude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I gave JC every reason to freaking hate my guts when I first met him, and he gave me the benefit of the doubt, which I wish everybody would, because I come across as an asshole most of the time.
But, so,
he's a great dude, leather. Man. He's a good brother to have, and I'm glad to call him my friend.
Awesome.
So, listen, whenever he's saying, like, when people meet me or whatever, like, the first time this fool met my wife, he was like, congratulations, Roy. Nice job. high five. I don't know what else to say.
Was that unbelievable, Matthew?
Oh, it was like a slow moving train wreck of embarrassment.
In my defense, I was dehydrated and I was baking in the fucking sun all day long. And then he brings his wife over to me, and I'm we're not getting into that.
I got you.
Why don't you talk about the first time I met you, Roy?
We'll save that for another one. Who you got, Chris?
I got this guy, I've been following him for a while. His name is Iron Wolf Industrial on Instagram. His actual name is Petrus, I believe. And he's a good dude. I've known him for a while. He's had a YouTube channel for a very long time. Like since the birth of YouTube, I believe. He's been around that long. He doesn't have a giant following on YouTube, but he does have a lot of really cool information about old vintage machinery. He does some blacksmithing videos. He does some machining videos. He does tool restorations. It's Iron Wolf Industrial on Instagram.
So
and he's a cool dude.
You were going to be surprised to know this, but he is in my 200.
Oh, yeah. That guy, dude, that guy, he's like super underrated. So when I bought my tractor, like my little Ford tractor, he just sent me a message on Instagram saying, hey, my brother bought one of those, and I got a brand new wiring harness, brand new distributor cap, brand new spark plugs, brand new this. I said, oh, how much you want for it? He says, I'll just send it to you. Because I bought like a 1945 Ford 9N, and he sent me all these brand new parts for it, just out of the blue.
Really?
And I was like, yeah. Like, and that, it was just like, cool. That was a while ago, but I've been following him for a while, and actually, when I first got into blacksmithing, some of his videos on YouTube, I was watching. And he's super cool, dude. He's got this really low voice. He's like,
well, I'm
Petrus from Iron Wolf Industrial. He's a great guy, though. He's really
so
cool.
So his profile picture, he looks like a train conductor that's about 70 years old.
Yeah, I think but he's not. He's like, he's a younger guy.
Yeah, I'm scrolling through. He just looks like a normal, like, 20 or 30 something year old.
He's just where, a like, cool where, guy. He does some really cool projects.
Where is he out of? In general.
I have no idea where he's out of right now. I can't even think of that right now. I have no idea, honestly. But
yeah.
He does everything from casting to machining stuff to anvil repairs and hit and miss engines. He's like all over the place. He doesn't really focus on one thing, but I know if it's old, he's into it. The most recent thing is he had this that you see that crazy disc sander that Andrew's currently selling.
Yeah, he's got one like it.
No, that was his.
Oh, and really?
Yeah. Andrew bought it from him, and
I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah, what a crazy. That's like the most insane disc sander I've ever seen in my life. I believe it's 33 inches. I think.
That baby is 5 horsepower, 3-phase motor.
31 inches. 31-inch disc sander. That's crazy for a disc sander. But anyway. Yeah, Petrus, Iron Wolf Industrial.
Yeah, I've been following him for a while.
He's a good dude. I think that's a wrap.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Matthew Justice.
Thank you for having me on.
Beaver Creek. Queef.
Beaver Creek Woodcraft.
Beaver Creek Woodcraft on Instagram. Go out, give Matthew Justice a follow. That's a wrap.
Done.
Axe and Iron Podcast.